It must be football season in Texas. This is Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD. Every Friday night, get an insider's look at college football with a Texas twist. From big matchups and exclusive interviews to expert analysis and accurate odds. Everything a Texas football fan needs. Game Day with Jeff Ward right now on News Radio 1080 KRLD. Powered by Uber Eats.
Hey, welcome to Game Day. I'm Jeff Ward, and wherever you are in Texas, thanks for listening. This is a show about the storylines of the games, the players, and the coaches of the programs you care about in the best football state in the country. So here's what's ahead. I'll give you my Game Day rankings 1 through 5. It's changed some. We've lost number 1 already. They weren't there long. We'll also talk about why there are so many, and this is true, why there are so many bizarre upsets in college football right now. The reason it's happening might surprise you, but it's probably not going to stop anytime soon. Some will think that's cool. Some will think that's outrageous. I'll break down the teams, the coaches, and the players most under pressure this week, and we'll finish up with some predictions. Well, last week ended up being a very good weekend for a couple of our top five teams. It was a disaster for the top team. The college football playoff poll was just released this past week, and the big picture of what it means for Texas, Texas A&M, and SMU is this. You want that selection committee to recognize you now in the very first poll among the top 14. And you want that because if any one of these three teams, A&M, Texas, SMU, if any one of the three is 14 or better, then they got a chance to get into the tournament if they don't win their league championship. Now, it's an outside shot for a couple of them, but at least they've got a chance. So all three started in a pretty decent place. So for Texas, they started number 6 in the college football playoff poll. They're most likely, outside of a complete and utter meltdown, they're in the playoff. But A&M, who starts the poll at number 14, I think it's pretty obvious A&M is probably going to have to win out and win the SEC to get in the tournament. But they're on that bubble. Remember, 14 or better ultimately could put you on the bubble. Now, that could include for A&M, if they were to win out, that could include a rematch with Texas if they beat Texas at the end of the year at Kyle Field. Now, SMU might be the most interesting team in this entire format now. SMU has only one loss this year, and that was a 3-point loss early in the year to an undefeated BYU team. All right? And SMU's rated number 13 by the committee this week. So that's fairly impressive. And SMU's resume justifies this. Remember, their resume includes a win over a ranked Louisville team on the road. They had a blowout win over ranked and undefeated Pitt this past weekend. So assuming SMU takes care of business the rest of the way, because it's a fairly easy schedule down the stretch, they're headed to the ACC championship game. Now, where this whole at-large, the committee has to love you thing comes into play is if SMU goes to the ACC championship game, they end up losing most likely to Miami. If you win, you're in automatic berth. But if they were to lose, it'd be a 2-loss team. And that is, that's really at the bubble at this point. But their resume is impressive enough to start the playoff poll at 13.
Now, the Game Day Power Index, powered by Kia of Fresco.
All right, so let's talk about our top five. We say goodbye to TCU. This spot now, number 5, has to either go to Texas State or Baylor. Unfortunately, it's almost by default. So pick a 4-loss team, and that's going to be our number 5 for this week. Both have 4 losses, Texas State and Baylor. But I'm going to put Baylor at 5 because they've won 2 in a row. And they've won 2 in a row, one on the road in Lubbock, scoring 59 points against Tech, and then TCU. So Baylor makes their way for the first time this year in a pretty impressive way. They're at number 5. They're turning the corner. And number 4 is up and down and up and down Texas Tech. It's a weird season for Texas Tech. Some of it really good, though. But you go back over time and look at this season. One week, they barely beat Abilene Christian. Then they turn around, they crush Arizona. Then one week, they get blown out by Baylor and Lubbock. Then they go on the road. And it was just a crazy win for Tech. They beat an undefeated Iowa State team on the road. They beat them by a point in a spectacular game. That win over Iowa State for Texas Tech, we could debate this, I guess, but I think it's Joey McGuire's biggest win at Tech. And now Tech, get this, they may have knocked Iowa State out of the Big 12 championship game unless Tech does it again this coming weekend. They get Colorado in Lubbock, and that means Colorado comes to Lubbock. This would be 2 weeks in a row for Texas Tech. They could knock a team out of the Big 12 championship game. Tech could be spoilers again. If Tech were to beat Colorado, then they'll knock them out. Colorado would be out in Iowa State, and believe it or not, Texas Tech could still be in the hunt. It's a must-watch game. This Tech-Colorado game sets up pretty nicely. It's must-watch. If you've not seen Colorado play this year, here's a quick primer. One, they're light years better than where they started this past season. Their defense is much, much better. This is a team that's now in the top 25. They have the best player, the best all-around player in the sport, I think, in decades, in Travis Hunter. This guy's crazy. He will play, if healthy, he will play 100 snaps in a game. He'll play both ways and be great at both of them. He's a top five NFL draft pick when the draft comes around in the spring. The other must-watch is going to be Shedeur Sanders, who will likely be the first quarterback taken in the NFL draft. So for a number of reasons, I mean, no one would have circled this game at the beginning of the year, but it's now must-watch. Tech is in an interesting spot. Falling, and I mean falling and falling pretty hard, to number three is Texas A&M. Just when I'm bragging about the Aggies, look what happens. They had the top spot going into last week's road game at South Carolina. Everybody said it was a dangerous road game, but they fell on their face. It was a 24-point loss by A&M. Everything that could go wrong for A&M did go wrong. The only upside for the Aggies at this point is, and they're not many, they gave up 44 points, so you're working pretty hard to find the upside. But the upside here is that it's still mathematically possible for them to get in the tournament, for them to get in the SEC championship game, even for them to win the SEC championship. So that gets them, if they were to win out, and that's the margin of error for A&M now, is non-existent. They will have to win out to get to the tournament, most likely. And that's going to include a game against Texas at the end of the year. A&M, the rest of the way, they go at Auburn. Then they play at home against New Mexico State. Then they get that little game of little importance against Texas at home at the end of the year. So if they could get to the SEC championship game, they would either likely play Georgia, Ole Miss, or a rematch with Texas. Now, it's been just when you think A&M has things figured out, just when you think they've got their path forward with the quarterback, everything goes horribly wrong. It would include turnovers. It would include penalties. It would include fourth down attempts that went sideways for A&M. And A&M coach Mike Elko, he's pretty much owned the whole thing this past week, and no one's going to say that he's wrong.
Not really too many ways to sugarcoat it. We played a really bad game. We coached a really bad game. We played a really bad game. And that's just something we're going to have to own. Defensively, it starts with me. We had a poor plan. We had poor answers. Run defense wasn't what it needed to be. There was too many missed assignments, too many perimeter edge issues with getting our perimeter fits the right way. And then in the pass game, I thought we had too many busts in the fourth quarter. Offensively, starts with me. We had a poor plan. We didn't do the things that we needed to do to be successful. We were awful in short yardage. And then I thought we had too many negative plays.
I told you he'd own it. is there anything he didn't say they did horribly wrong? It's true, though. You know, A&M has been spotty at times on offense, but everywhere else, they have been rock solid all year. They've not had a ton of penalties. They don't turn the ball over a lot. They play really, really good defense. You know, they've been the model of consistency all year long, even while they're trying to figure out this quarterback thing. And shockingly, and I mean it when I say shockingly, they just fell completely apart. He's right. So, can they fix it? Yeah. It's a good enough team. Do they have to fix it? Absolutely. They go on the road this next week. Back at number one is Texas. They didn't even play, and they're back at number one. They get a struggling Florida team this weekend. And the funny thing is about the first college football playoff poll, the selection committee did not care at all about Texas's schedule. Texas starts the poll at number 6. And what's amazing about that, and I'm pretty sure they're at 6 because the name is Texas, but what's amazing about that is they have played only one team that's ranked in the top 25 as of now. And that was a blowout loss at home to Georgia. That's the only team now, as of right now, in the first college football poll, that's the only team that Texas has played that's in the college football poll top 25. And they were rolled by Georgia in Austin. So I haven't heard much of it, but if people wanted to complain about Texas's schedule, that's fair. It really is fair. It's not exactly been tough. It's been about as easy as you could get for someone just joining the SEC. Now, it's not all their fault because most people thought Michigan would be better. They're terrible, not in the top 25. Oklahoma, everyone assumed would be better. They're terrible. They're not in the top 25. And Vanderbilt, who Texas barely beat on the road, is not even in this top 25. So the only question now for Texas is, can they win the SEC? Can they get to the SEC championship game? Can they win the SEC championship game? The secret there is you get a first-round bye. Otherwise, even if A&M were to beat Texas at Kyle Field at the end of the year, given the fact that Texas starts the poll at number 6, I think you could agree that they're in this tournament almost no matter what. It would be shocking for them to lose to Florida. It would be shocking for them to lose to Kentucky. It would be extra shocking for them to lose to a bad Arkansas team. So it's in front of them, and they're on their way to that tournament almost no matter what. All right, so there's our top five. The poll is out. Yes, it'll make your face hurt. Next up, let's do this. Let's talk about, in college football today, all of the upsets. And you see it every single week now, these bizarre upsets that are completely unpredictable. And they're happening regularly and more than usual, I think we could say. There's an interesting reason for all these bizarre upsets. In fact, some coaches in the offseason have even talked about this. And I think you're going to find this conversation interesting. We're going to talk about why it is that there's so many upsets in college football. And the answer is because college football now basically has free agency. And you can decide for yourself if you think this free agency is working or this free agency concept now in college football is not working. I'm Jeff Ward. This is Game Day.
Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD, powered by Uber Eats. You're listening to Game Day with Jeff Ward, powered by Uber Eats, breaking down Texas college football right here on News Radio 1080 KRLD.
I'm Jeff Ward. This is Game Day. Think of transfers in college football. You hear the transfer portal term all the time, right? Think of it like free agency in the NFL. You bounce around from place to place. Now, you can't think it's exactly like the NFL because, unlike the NFL, college football has very, very few rules. But the thing about these transfers and the transfer portal, it does explain a lot of the up and down nature of many of these teams. And it does, you're going to hear the discussion, it does make sense why you're seeing so many upsets. Josh Pate is host of the hugely popular Josh Pate College Football Show on YouTube, as well as his own podcast on every platform. Hey, Josh, do you buy the argument that we're seeing, first of all, the argument that we're seeing so many upsets? I guess that's debatable, but it feels like it. That these upsets are happening, these crazy outcomes are happening because of the transfer portal, which is pretty much college football's modern day free agency. It makes an instant equalizer. Do you buy that?
I unequivocally buy it, yes.
Okay. Do you think we're having more upsets?
I think we are, and I think November will probably go a lot further in exacerbating this notion. I don't think by the end of the season it'll even be a question of are we seeing more. It'll probably just shift to what you led with, which is why are we seeing more. And I really think maybe the diagnosis has been a little misplaced. I was in Athens this spring, for example, and we were going to do a sit down with Kirby, but I was talking with him before we went on air. And he was talking about this. And he was talking about what was going to come this year with a lot of the big teams, maybe his included, and how they were more vulnerable. And he said, you know, people are going to hear me say that, and they're going to think, no, that's crazy. You haven't lost any starters. And he said, my starters aren't going to leave. Like, I'm Georgia. I'm not going to lose starters. I'm going to lose twos. Because someone out there is willing to pay my backup left guard $175,000, and he's probably not worth that, and I'm not going to pay that. And in the aggregate, our depth chart, if we have injury anywhere, used to be us going from a 1 to really a 1A because they had elite depth. Now it's Georgia even going from a 1 to maybe a 3 caliber player, and it doesn't take long for that to happen, and it doesn't take many injuries of that caliber happening to really expose you. I think Texas has seen that at the tailback position. I think Georgia has seen that on the offensive line. And then you got the normal problems that anyone could deal with where your quarterback comes back for another year. There's regression at the position. Georgia's dealing with that. I keep using them as an example. But many programs are seeing that this year. I just think in the aggregate what's happened is the transfer portal has taken a sling blade to the second level of depth that a lot of these teams used to have. And as a result, it's made them a little more hollow. The top five this year, for example, is so much more vulnerable than your average top five would be entering November.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I mean, it's starting to play itself out because the blue blood programs, if they could just keep everybody healthy, their frontline players are good enough to run the table, but it's ridiculous to think that you'll never suffer injuries, right?
That's correct. And then the really fast forward button on that is it going to stay that way? Because this is really what I wonder. I think that's where we are in the here and now.
Yeah.
But in the future, I really wonder is, have we just settled here? I don't think we have. I don't ever remember a time in college football where there was huge change and the big boys didn't eventually adapt to it and work it to their advantage. I mean, we've always had big change, and initially maybe it's like someone slapping you on the back of the head. Initially it takes you off guard, but when you turn around, square up with them, then you got a fair shot at taking them down. Well, I think big boys and blue bloods or whatever you want to call them in college football have always been the same. They may not deal with the change immediately, but eventually they will find a way to harness it to their advantage. And as long as there's that disparity in power in this sport, and there always will be, then I just wonder. I mean, it may be that your teams like an Iowa State or Brigham Young or whoever right now, they're in a little bit of a window where maybe this is the perfect time to strike while the iron is hot. But I don't know that it's always going to be that way.
Yeah, you think that explains Indiana and, say, maybe SMU?
I think, yes, but I also think with Indiana, that's a perfect case study. I'm glad you brought them up. UNLV is another example like this of programs that are doing big things this year, and they've popped a result on you that may have surprised you. And you got to understand, not all transfer portal acquisitions are created equal. Indiana is a perfect example of a place where Cignetti was at James Madison, and he comes to Indiana. But what he did was he took a lot of players that were really good and integral parts of that James Madison team, and they transferred with him. Barry Odom is the head coach at UNLV right now. I was in his office last week sitting there with him the Friday they played Boise. I was with him earlier in the day, and he said, you know, we added a lot of portal guys when I came here. I'm in my second year now, and we got a lot of transfer guys making big contributions. But what folks may not realize is there is not a single kid that we've added from the portal that I had neither already coached at another stop or I hadn't personally recruited at a prior stop like Arkansas or Missouri. So he said, yeah, we added guys, but we weren't rolling the dice on these guys. I took kids I knew, and in some cases I had already coached, but at the very least I recruited them, I vetted them, I evaluated them, I already knew them. And so that's the magic ingredient. Find these programs out there that may have taken a lot of guys in the portal, but for some reason, there is an attachment. There is a predisposed idea that maybe they've caught lightning in a bottle, and then you just got to go get the right quarterback. I mean, that's what Cignetti did with Rourke at Indiana. And, I mean, that's what Hugh Freeze has not done at Auburn, and that is the differentiator.
Okay, so that, you know, the sport itself, I mean, I've argued for some time has no guidelines. It doesn't really have any barriers. It's sort of a free-for-all for right now. And I'm wondering, and I don't even know, you've sat down with some of these coaches, I'm wondering if they would even admit this, because the sport doesn't really, it certainly doesn't follow it like the NFL, where they have tampering issues, and the NFL will come down hard on you. I'm just curious, say, take the guy at Indiana, Cignetti, and he's leaving James Madison. So he knows, you know, he works out a deal at midnight the night before. Does he then get right on the phone and say, hey, listen, you know, he's got a select number of players that he wants to take with him, or guys that he's targeted, whatever it is. Does he get on the phone or meet with them, or even sit in his office, the last day of his office, and say, hey, I want you to know I'm going to a bigger and better place. Come with me. Is that what's happening when these guys bounce from place to place?
To a certain extent, yeah.
Yeah.
But there are a couple of different angles there. One of them, we just saw this with Alabama. Like, Saban retires, DeBoer comes in, but there is a 30-day window. It's a rule that the NCAA has where if your head coach leaves, there's a 30-day window where you can transfer penalty-free. So it's a little bit different at that point, because it's not illegal to reach out to those kids that are on that roster, even if you are the coach that left them, crazy though that may sound. But the other thing I've had explained to me a number of times is if you'll see what you think is maybe a shady move. A kid goes in the portal and then he ends up somewhere and everyone's like, oh, well, what do you know? And the insinuation is that the program tampered with the kid. Well, a lot of times what's happened is the kids initiated the contact. And it may be directly or it may be via third party, but the kids initiated the contact. So, you know, Lincoln Riley got painted really negatively a couple of cycles ago, and I happen to have some pretty firsthand knowledge of a couple of examples where Lincoln Riley nor anyone associated with him reached out. A couple of kids reached out to them, and at that point, you're kind of like, well, what do I do here? I got a really quality player that I'd love to have that's reaching out to us. Do I say no? Do I not answer the call because I think it may look unethical? And that's just one example. There are many examples of that, but I will admit to you now, they do pale in comparison to the rampant tampering that's happening, totally unchecked. No one's even concerned they'll get caught. They're of the opinion, even if they do get caught, everyone else does it. It's like I grew up in Georgia. When we would drive through Atlanta, the speed limit sign said 55, and everyone laughed as they went 75 or 80 miles an hour by it. No one was worried about getting pulled over. Even the cops were doing 75 or 80. And so it does happen. I mean, it's everywhere. However, I think there are multiple layers to it.
All right, two big takeaways from this conversation. Actually, there should be probably even more than two big takeaways. But think about this. College football needs to enforce tampering rules. I mean, if you're going to have a player, if you're going to have a coach, if you're going to have an agreement, which is a problem by itself, an agreement in place, then like the NFL, you're never going to have any consistency. You're going to have a hard time having any depth whatsoever, ever, if you don't have any sort of protection against tampering, reaching out, taking somebody's players, reaching out to players already at another school. It needs to exist, and it needs to be enforced. That's one. Number two, players need, if you want to operate like the NFL, and college football is sort of doing that, but it's doing it in a lawless way. But if you're going to operate like the NFL, and you're going to have these players getting paid and have agreements to get paid and things like that, there should be agreements to be at a certain school. Now, I can tell you this, how it used to work. Scholarships are one-year renewables. They are grants in aid. And so they are, in effect, a one-year agreement. But agreements should exist now. That doesn't mean you have to be tied to a place your entire career, but they should at least be year or two long agreements. Doesn't mean you can't get out of it, but there needs to be some form of an agreement so the rosters stay the same for at least a season, more than three games, which is what's happening many places around the country, guys playing three games and then leaving. So there should be some agreements. I think set at 2 years is reasonable. And if the player then wants to leave, if there's an agreement that they leave, then the school gets something in return. The school should get a scholarship back. That just seems reasonable, and that seems fair when a player leaves. Number three, the sport needs a commissioner. We can argue all day about who that should be, but the sport itself needs a commissioner. It needs guidance. It desperately needs some guardrails. It needs an objective enforcer of the rules. And Yeah, it's exactly like the NFL model, because right now, without any really central figure, the NCAA exists, but it's kind of like your neighborhood association, right? I mean, they can't do a heck of a lot unless you agree to follow their rules. And then you've got this setup where it's a weird mix of conferences and programs that sort of answer to their own conference, but not anybody else. And what you need is, if you're going to have this big operation, you're going to have players bouncing from place to place, if you're going to have this revenue share that's kicking in a year, then you need a commissioner. Getting them to agree on that, because they can't agree on anything, getting them to agree on that is next to impossible. But I think most people in the sport would even say, we need an objective voice. We need an objective enforcer of the rules. All right, let's talk about Texas Tech, their up and down season, and their chance to be spoiler again this weekend. It's game day. I'm Jeff Ward.
Game day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD, powered by Uber Eats. Game day with Jeff Ward, where Texas college football goes under the lights. On News Radio 1080 KRLD.
This is game day. I'm Jeff Ward. LSU-Alabama is a tournament 12-team tournament knockout game. But not far behind that is Texas Tech hosting red-hot Colorado with a win in Lubbock. Colorado could be on their way to the Big 12 championship game. A Tech win, and it knocks them out completely, because Tech beat Iowa State a year ago, and I can't believe I'm about to utter these words. An Iowa State loss somewhere in the mix, somewhere along the way. Tech beats Colorado, and Tech could find their way into a Big 12 championship game.
Now, so they say, powered by the Low T Center, reinventing men's healthcare.
John Williams is a columnist for the Lubbock Avalanche Journal. All right, I don't have to tell you this. This is a wild ride with this Tech team. I mean, we can start the year with them fighting for their lives to beat Abilene Christian at home. They give up 59 points to Baylor, and we think that's it, dead man walking. The next thing you know, they're knocking off Iowa State on the road, and now, maybe I'm the only one doing this, I bet not, now we're saying they might even be playing for a Big 12 championship game. You want to explain this one, Don?
Well, it's a team that I think partially explained by saying, you know, one of the positive trends for Texas Tech under Joey McGuire is that his teams have gotten better as the season has gone along, which obviously that's what you shoot for, and that's what a lot of people talk about. But his teams have actually borne it out pretty well, because this is year three for Joey in Lubbock. And in games played in November and December, this counts bowl games, he's 9-2. And the only of those two losses are to teams that made the college football playoff, to TCU 2 years ago, and then, of course, to Texas in Austin, that monster blowout game last year. But other than that, every other game that Joey McGuire's Texas Tech teams have played this time of year and later, the Red Raiders have won them all. And that TCU game 2 years ago, that was actually the first one. So they've actually won 8 of their last 9 in this scenario.
So is that right mathematically? Because they would have the head-to-head against Iowa State, you know, a win against Colorado in Lubbock this weekend, and then some quirky thing happens to Iowa State somewhere along the way. They're in the game, right?
I haven't looked closely enough at it, because one, it's pretty wide open at the top. You have BYU's 5-0, Iowa State, Colorado are 4-1. Kansas State and Tech are 4-2, and within Cincinnati, Arizona State, and West Virginia all also only have 2 losses. All those teams are 3-2. And inevitably at this time of the year, people start talking about what happens if all these teams win out. And yeah, of course, it doesn't happen. They don't all win out. And so, mathematically, yeah, it's definitely conceivable that Tech could be in the Big 12 championship game. But there's a lot of ground to cover between now and then.
Yeah, talk a little bit about Colorado. I don't know if Colorado were to come into Lubbock and win this weekend and then run the table, which I think they're more than capable of doing. This would be their toughest game. You know, we're now talking about a 10-win Colorado team that looks light years different than it did in September. I don't know. I don't know that he would be the national coach of the year because of what has happened with Kirk Cignetti at Indiana. But Deion Sanders, Deion Sanders couldn't be far behind, could he?
He would definitely be in the conversation. I mean, of course, I would say Kalani Sitake from Brigham Young has to be in that conversation,
yeah,
too, with an undefeated team. And I mean, their team was picked, I think, 13th in the Big 12 at the start of the year. But yeah, I mean, obviously, there have been a lot of skeptics of Deion. I've been among them. I mean, what we talk about this at different times, the best coaches are usually guys who are either average and below players in most sports that you think about. I mean, some of the best managers in baseball were guys who had a cup of coffee in the big leagues. The guy who won the most football games at Texas Tech, Mike Leach, never played college football and was only a, you know, kind of a marginal high school player. Great players usually are not the greatest coaches.
Right.
And so partially based on that, I thought, you know, I was kind of among those who thought Deion as a coach was probably more flash and hype than substance, but he's kind of getting the last word on people. Of course, there's a lot still to be said, but I mean, this is a team that's won five of its last six games, and maybe more impressive, it's a team that's won three in a row on the road. And so, from afar, I'm pretty impressed with what he's doing. It seems like, you know, he took a lot of criticism for the tear down that he did of that program. You know, getting rid of so many of the players he inherited and turning over the roster almost completely. And there's a lot of question about the rightness of that. You know, it looks like the plan is coming together pretty well. Now, you know, I think another question beyond that is how long is Deion going to be a Colorado Buffalo when Shadur and Travis Hunter are gone at the end of the year? Is he willing to stay around for the long haul or for a longer haul, or is he on to the next thing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the more they win and the better it looks, the more, of course, he's talked about either a package deal with his son into the NFL. I don't know how practical that is, or, you know, what opens up out there. If you're a betting man now, no matter what happens in Lubbock this weekend, if you're a betting man now, is he the coach at Colorado a year from now?
You know, I think that's kind of to be determined, based less on his inclination to leave, less on his inclination to stay or go, and more on what is available, what is out there for him. In other words, he may in fact be interested in leaving, but does he have a job?
Yeah.
Is there a job that he wants and likes out there this year in December, or is it something where he kind of sits tight for a year?
No, that's a good point. You're right. Because at this point, it wouldn't do him any good to make a lateral move. You're right. He would have to wait for a, you know, a blue blood program. So we'll talk about Tech. They start the year, they're in a shootout at home against Abilene Christian. How is this team so different now?
Well, I talked about the theme of Joey McGuire's teams have gotten better in all three of his seasons as the year has gone on. The other, I think, key number to know for Texas Tech this year is they are 5-1 in games that have been decided by 8 points or fewer. That includes, in close games. They beat Abilene Christian 52-51. They beat Arizona State 30-22. Beat Cincinnati 44-41. Cincinnati missed a field goal at the end that would have sent overtime. Beat Arizona 28-22. They had to come back in that one from down 19-18 late. and beat Iowa State, of course, last week, 23-22. So it's a team that has just kind of made the plays that had to make to win game, to win tight games at the end. Now, I think there's a regression or reversion factor that you have to be very cognizant of. It's hard to keep doing that week after week after week when you don't necessarily have superior talent. Texas Tech doesn't necessarily have superior talent. You don't have superior talent and lose 59-35 to Baylor, or lose 37-16 to Washington State as they did. And so it's, you know, 6-3 is probably the best they could be at this point. But again, with all those one score games, this is a team that could easily be 3-6.
Don, as always, great stuff. Good talking to you, man.
You too, Jeff. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
You bet. All right, that's Texas Tech and Colorado this week in a huge game. Let's talk about who's under the most pressure this weekend and pick some games as well. This is Game Day. I'm Jeff Ward.
Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD, powered by Uber Eats. This is Game Day with Jeff Ward, powered by Uber Eats on News Radio 1080 KRLD.
I'm Jeff Ward, and this is Game Day. So what coaches, players, or teams are under the most pressure this weekend?
Now, Under Pressure, powered by Sampac 5-Star Ford, North Richland Hills.
All right, there's a lot to spread around, so here we go. The Under Pressure list. For once, for the first time all season, it's not Texas Tech that's under pressure. It's actually their opponent. Shedeur Sanders makes the Under Pressure list, and here's why. He's ridiculously talented. He's a quarterback for Colorado, likely to be the first quarterback taken in the NFL draft. He's the best, in my opinion, the best in the game right now, and his team is now chasing the unthinkable. A 10-win season and playing for a conference championship. A loss by Colorado in Lubbock, and they're out. Tech, I think, is playing with house money. There's absolutely no pressure on Texas Tech this weekend, so we're about to find out if Colorado can handle the pressure. Under pressure, first time all year, in a good way, Dave Aranda, the head coach at Baylor. He's gone from the most likely Big 12 coach to get fired to a guy that with three more wins, he'd be right up there with Deion Sanders for coach of the year in the Big 12. Baylor now has quietly won three games in a row, and they could get three more with only West Virginia, Houston, and Kansas left. And can you believe this? They can get to 7 or 8 wins this year. If he loses 2 of the 3 or even all 3, he might be in trouble. Under pressure, to say the least. This guy's been under pressure since last July. Billy Napier, the head coach at Florida. I'm not sure that he's not already been fired in some way, in some capacity, but there has never been a more brutal schedule. Check this out for Florida. The Florida stretch over the end of the season goes like this. Tennessee, at Texas, LSU, and Ole Miss. If he were to pull off an upset in Austin, could he save his job? Maybe. Probably, I guess. But the problem is Texas had the week off, and they're more than ready for a stretch run themselves. In Colorado, I mean, Florida's got to be tired at this point. So here's what Steve Sarkisian said about his team this week.
For us as a team, you know, our mojo offensively is one thing I want to get back. You know, our whether you want to call it our sense of urgency, our intent, the way we go about our business. You know, we've got a talented group of guys that are very competitive. They're tough. They work really hard. They want to play well. Sometimes you can overtry, if that makes sense. And to me, that gets back into your mojo. That gets back into our swagger a little bit. And I want to try to recreate that with the guys, because I know what we're capable of. And if we can get that clicking to go along with what we're doing defensively and special teams wise, that would be a huge bonus.
Well, never heard Steve Sarkisian use mojo so often, but that's bad news for Billy Napier. I think what Steve Sarkisian is saying is, you know what? We haven't played very well offensively in the past several weeks. I think he's also saying my quarterback, who was once a Heisman Trophy candidate or favorite, hasn't played all that well in a few weeks either. So bad news, Florida. If Texas puts it together, they run you out of the stadium and Billy Napier is most likely fired. Under pressure, SMU. Now you're going to think, well, why would that be? SMU's on a streak. SMU's in a great position. That's exactly right. That's why they're under pressure. SMU can not only not slip up and lose a game the rest of the season, but the burden is now on SMU to blow everybody out that they play. They have three games left. And the reason why I would say that the pressure's on SMU to blow everybody out is they're playing for two things. One, of course, just getting to the ACC championship game. You win that game, you're automatically in the 12-team tournament, right? But the second part of this is that you're playing for style points. And that is, if SMU makes it to the ACC tournament, the ACC championship game, I mean, and if they were to lose to a really, really good Miami, a top five Miami team, would they still be able to get an at-large berth in the 12-team tournament? Right now, they're on that bubble spot. The College Football Playoff Committee has them at 13. So the reason why SMU is probably going to need to blow everybody out that they have left is to impress that committee. It's not a great system by any stretch, but the resume of SMU really matters. And it is a really good resume. They've beaten several ranked teams already this year. And if they could blow some people out down the stretch, that committee may think, wow, you're only two losses. Remember this. If SMU were to lose the ACC championship game, their only two losses all season would be against an undefeated BYU team that was a three-point loss. And then their only other loss was in the ACC championship game against a top five or four SMU team. So resume matters. The burden is on SMU not just to win, but to blow everyone out in their way.
Now, by the numbers, powered by Classic Chevrolet.
All right, let's do this. Last thing, let's pick a few games. Yes, these are against the point spread. Sorry about that. That means no wagering, not encouraging wagering unless it's among your family members. All right, here we go. We start with Texas and Florida. Can you imagine this betting line? The point spread now is Texas in Austin over Florida, and Texas favored by 21.5 points. Don't know what to make of Florida. Don't know which direction they're going. That's a ridiculously big number for a power school like Florida. Their quarterback is a guy that not many people know about, but he's a really, really good and talented player. His name is DJ Lagway. And if he plays, I think Florida loses, of course, but maybe not by 21 points or more. So I'll just think that they've got some energy left in them, that there's a little bit of talent left there. I'll say that Florida covers that point spread, but they lose. Then you get Texas State favored by a touchdown over Louisiana Monroe. Texas State started the year with some energy. It's still a good program, and I'm going to take them on the road in that game. They're a 7-point favorite over Louisiana Monroe. The big game, I think it's one of the biggest games of the weekend. I think the biggest game of the weekend is going to be Alabama-LSU. That decides a lot. That's a knockout game for the 12-team tournament. But this Texas Tech-Colorado game is a knockout game for the Big 12. There is a way, a sneaky way, that with a Texas Tech win, they could find their way very much in the hunt for the Big 12 championship game. Colorado, of course, it's all in front of them. They went out, and they're in the championship game. So the setup is this. Colorado, I'm somewhat surprised by this. Colorado is favored by 3.5 points in Lubbock against Texas Tech. It's a tough call. I mean, you never know which Texas Tech team you're going to get. Week to week, you don't know. But when they're good, they're really tough. That said, this Colorado team and Deion Sanders, if they win out, Deion Sanders is the runaway coach of the year in the Big 12, and probably going to finish first or second as coach of the year nationally. This team is light years better than when they started this season. It's impressive, to say the least. I'm going to take Shedeur Sanders and the best player of the last 10 or 15 years, Travis Hunter, and I'm going to take a wild guess that Colorado covers the 3.5. It's a really interesting test for two interesting programs at a really cool spot. They're both have turned out to be better than we probably thought. So this is a good game. This is a must-watch game. Then you get to TCU. These are two programs that are just, it's to say that it's been an underachieving, disappointing season is an understatement. Right now, TCU is favored by 11 over winless Oklahoma State. Now think about that. Oklahoma State a year ago plays in the Big 12 Conference Championship. This year, they haven't won a game. In fact, this past week is total chaos because Mike Gundy, on a conference call, called his critics losers who can't pay their utility bills. That's a quote. He's since apologized, but they are a... Oklahoma State is a full-on dumpster fire. They're a mess. TCU was favored by 11. I'll take TCU. Given where Oklahoma State is and all the chaos of this week, I will actually take TCU to cover the 11 in Fort Worth, even though it's a down year for them. All right, that'll do it. Interesting games all weekend. That'll do it for game day. I'm Jeff Ward. We'll do it again next week.
Game Day with Jeff Ward on News Radio 1080 KRLD, powered by Uber Eats.